League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So here we are again.
We certainly are. Another
on the record.
Certainly.
The new year is well into its prime now.
New year? I don't even talk about the new year, man. That's weeks ago.
Well, I know it's weeks ago, but what I'm saying is that, you know, it feels like the new year is over and done with, and here we are.
Feels like January to me.
Well, yeah, I know, but what I'm saying is that, you know, January's nearly over.
Yeah,
and the point is that, you know, here we are with lots
it's
of things to talk about.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, we were talking just the other week about Porky Vision and about TV shows. I'm going to ask you, one of the things that Netflix has done recently is buy up all of the rights to every episode of Friends.
Yes.
And I don't know if you ever used to watch Friends.
No, I wasn't a great fan of Friends. Is that one based in Boston?
No, it was based in New York.
Oh, Cheers was based
Cheers
in Boston.
Cheers was based in Boston. You must have been to the bar. You haven't been to the Cheers bar?
I never watched an episode of Cheers.
Did you not?
Turn me on.
Why?
Friends I like because of Jennifer Aniston, but that was all.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I watched the first one
right
for the first time.
Oh, okay.
Thinking that I'd seen it before, but in fact, I hadn't seen it. Because I'm like, a bit like you. I mean, I used to watch it, but I'd only watch it by accident. I never watched it by appointment.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was quite interesting. It's good. It's a great show. It's a really great show.
Yeah, okay, good. Listen, during the last few weeks, as you say, it's January, we missed a legendary birthday.
Did we?
Arthur Scargill, 80 years of age.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what do you know about Arthur Scargill?
Well, Arthur Scargill always reminds me of that great story about Mickey Brennan.
Yeah.
When he went to Cuba.
That's right.
And Arthur Scargill was invited by Fidel Castro.
Yeah.
Along with all the other great...
Arthur Scargill was planning to bring down parliamentary democracy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was also part of that kind of, you know, workers' international brigade of...
He was, yeah, he was.
Who were invited by people like Castro to come and... I think it was either Castro's, I don't know, 70th birthday or Castro's...
No, it
was the anniversary of something or other.
I think it was the anniversary of the revolution, that's right, yeah.
Something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people who are listening to this will have heard this story before.
Yeah.
But it's probably worth telling again.
Of course it is.
That Mickey Brennan, who's our good friend who now lives in Costa Rica, was flown from New York City to get a picture of Arthur Scargill. Because they didn't want
to
send...
Next to Arthur Scargill, next to Fidel Castro.
And the setup was that they'd all gone into Cuba, into Havana.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was either at a football stadium or the equivalent of a football stadium. And on the stage were a bit like a massive school photo.
Yeah, that's
You know, rows and rows and rows of people.
Yeah.
One behind the other. And supposedly, in amongst of all of these people was Arthur Scargill.
Yes.
Who was going to be close enough... say, four or five people away, maybe two back
from Fidel Castro. Yeah.
And that would be the great picture on the front page, because he was one of the great villains, wasn't
he? He was,
of the sort of, I guess, this would have been 80s, I suppose?
80s, yeah, definitely
Mid-80s,
yeah.
I think, because I think I was there.
Yeah.
Problem was, because of American enmity with Cuba, you couldn't fly straight into Havana from the USA.
You had to fly to somewhere
Either go into somewhere in the Caribbean.
Yeah, that's right.
Or you had to go to Mexico.
Yeah.
Mickey had to go in via Mexico City.
Puerto Rico, I think, was an entry point as well.
Well, no, because Puerto Rico is part of America. You'd have to go...
My
sister went to Cuba and she flew in via Jamaica.
Oh, that's right,
Because you'd have to go to a sort of a non-American type island.
That's right.
Anyway, he flies to Mexico City. In those days, it was before digital cameras.
Mm.
So you had to actually take a picture on a piece of film.
That's right.
And then you had to...
rewind the film,
you had to
take
rewind
it out your camera,
film,
put another one in.
Put another one in, develop the film, print it, and then send the print
on a drum
via a very elaborate sort of drum mechanism.
That's right.
And
you had to do all that, you had to turn your hotel bedroom into a dark room so you could fix and dev the film.
Which they all did brilliantly.
That's
I mean, it was an amazing process that they could actually do it.
Yeah.
But the problem was, one of the things that he knew he couldn't do was do all of that in Cuba, because there wasn't any facility.
That's right.
He had to fly in, take the picture, fly back out, and then send the picture, right? So he flies in, and he tells the story very well, that when he got there, the photographers were all on a sort of platform, about, I don't know, 100 yards back.
Yes.
So they all had big lenses and stuff like that, and he met a mate of his who was working for the AP, Associated Press, and because he'd lived in America for so long, he wasn't absolutely certain what Arthur Scargill looked like.
No.
So he said to the guy from AP, who was American, which one of those guys up there is Arthur Scargill? And the guy goes, oh, that's him over there. He's about third from the right. see that guy with a big moustache? He's just behind him. And so Mickey goes, you know, tick, 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 takes a load of pictures, bang, bang, right, oh, I'm off fucking Cubans, you know, because he was always moaning.
About everything,
gets out back to Mexico City, checks into the hotel, does the whole process as we described, sends the picture over. Yeah. And I think he was doing it for the Mail or the Mail on Sunday.
Mail on Sunday, I think. And he got a phone call.
Yes, a phone call from the picture editor saying, yeah, great, Mickey, got these pictures. Where's the picture of Scargill?
yeah.
And he goes, I've sent you the picture of Scargill. Yeah. He's the guy third from the right.
No,
right,
he hasn't got a moustache, Mickey.
And the bloke's going, no, that's not Arthur Scargill.
No.
He's like, oh, you're joking. He said, well, he must be in there somewhere because the guy pointed him out to me. And he then starts describing how this guy pointed him out.
Yeah.
And he went, no, that's not what he looks like.
No, he doesn't look anything like that.
He doesn't look anything like that.
Go back.
And he said, I can't go back. He said, I've only got a one-time entry visa.
Yeah.
So he completely failed to get the picture of Arthur Scargill, who was going to be painted as the great revolutionary, the man who, as you say, was plotting the downfall
of the
British parliamentary system.
So on the same trip, right, because everybody went down there, Brian Vine went with Brian Hitchens.
Okay.
Right. Now, the two Brians, Brian Hitchens was the news editor in London.
Yeah.
Brian Vine was the doyen of the New York press. So the guy who would never buy us a drink in Costello's because he thought we were too young and inexperienced to join his circle.
Shockingly,
you know, his circle of acolytes, you know, kind of stuff. You know.
Who, in fact, had done this to me and probably to you as well.
Yeah.
Actually pointed to me at one point and said, everybody gets a drink apart from him.
Yes. Yeah.
He didn't even know me. I thought, what a wanker.
Yeah, what a twat. Yeah, what a complete twat. Well, came to a sorry end. He died.
Well, there's no need to dance.
No,
grave.
No.
Sorry that he
stayed. In his house once.
Did you?
Stayed in his house once
in
West
America?
London. No, in West London.
How did you?
When he came back.
Why did you stay there?
Because the New York Welcome Committee was a great friend because she'd worked for him for 6 years.
She hadn't shagged him as well,
No, definitely not.
Thank God for that.
Had to tie him once to a chair with sellotape to stop him chasing around the desk, seriously, when he came back from lunch after like half a dozen great cocktails.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
He used to drink the
martinis.
The martinis, that's right, yeah. Mm. But anyway, he goes down there and Brian Hitchens happens to be in town.
Right.
He's the news editor of The Express in London. And says, well, great adventure, I'll come with you, you know. So they get another visa, goes down. So they went down, but they were just bunglers. They were too old to be doing the job.
Right.
They're both in their 50s at least.
Forgotten what they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah, their 50s at least. Mm. Made themselves utterly, you know, obvious that they were, you know, they were English gentlemen in town.
Right.
Because unlike Mickey, would have kept a low profile and put a hat on and all that kind of stuff.
And also the photographers had to get something.
Exactly.
I mean, you could write around anything, as a reporter.
But they were bumbling around, you know, giving the old, my good man, bring me a run a cigar and all that kind of
stuff. I stood on the balcony of Castro's palace and witnessed something I will never forget.
That's right. Bring me a
And then they just
martini.
Make the rest of it up.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But anyway, because they were so bungling and useless, they got arrested, right?
Really?
So they got arrested. And this is a great line, which Brian Hitchens told me. They got arrested and put into the back of a car and were being taken off somewhere, at which point Vine completely panics, you know. And says, where are you taking us? You know, all kind of stuff. You know, and just shut up.
Right.
You know, and all they were doing was deporting them and taking them to the airport, you know.
Right.
So anyway, on the way to where they were going, so Brian Vine in his head thought, they're taking us to a torture centre or something like that.
They hook us up to the electrodes.
Yeah. So he says to Hitchens, right, he says, now then, Hitchens, I'm going to have to pull rank on you.
Yeah.
These swine, if they decide they're going to torture us, you'll have to go first.
What a gentleman.
Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable. That does not surprise me in the slightest.
It was, yeah. But anyway, talking about Scargill,
right? Yeah. His so main... he was 80, you say. Does he still have the grace and favour place in the barbecue?
Well, it's all, I don't know the answer to that because there's been legal battles. Mm. That was given to him grace and favour by a union.
Yeah.
Not quite sure which one because right. the union's changed over the years. But Arthur Scargill basically, in the 80s, took on Mrs. Thatcher when he had a union with about 250,000 members.
Yeah.
Today, it's got less than like 4,000.
And was that
1,000.
The NUM or was that?
It was
different...
the National Union of Miners.
It was the NUM.
Joe Gorman.
Because there were two, weren't there?
There was two, but there were big splits in division in the NUM between the Nottinghamshire Coalfield and the Yorkshire Coalfield and all that. But the point of the story is that he took on Mrs. Thatcher at the wrong possible time.
Yeah.
Took her on in the summer when coal stocks were high.
Yeah.
He took her on when she was riding high after the Falklands effect and all that kind of stuff. Right. Yeah. And he destroyed his own union by saying we can bring the government down.
Yeah.
He got it all completely and utterly wrong. He
but
was
it was
humiliated.
Also at that time, I suppose, it was when the two immovable forces had to come together.
Yes, that's right.
And the unions until that moment had always won.
Yes,
I mean,
they'd
taken
won.
Down the Heath government. The last time there'd been a rig
Yeah, they had,
row
under Joe Gormley. Because Joe Gormley was a sort of a pragmatic, knew how far he could push it. Scargill just told everyone. But anyway, the great story I want to tell you about Scargill, I remember from that dispute was, we've talked before about the animal. Right?
The animal, yes.
Colin Adamson.
Colin Adamson, yeah.
Who worked for
He's also still around.
Is he still
around? The Standard. Yeah, he lives in Bristol now, I think.
Oh, okay. Good for him, yeah.
He's retired, but he's still around.
Well, I knew Col for a number of years, worked with him in Fleet Street, and he used to come into the Poppy J sometimes, working on the Standard, which was next door, in a terrible state. You know, he drank a lot of booze, old
he
Col.
Did.
And he enjoyed himself as a Fleet Street reporter. So he's given the brief of infiltrating Scargill's people,
right? Yeah.
So he, So
amazing what used to be done.
Absolutely,
because you can't imagine that happening now.
No,
can you?
No. But you know, he was a rough, gruff Scots boy, Carl.
I mean,
you know,
he was a very tall guy, as
very
well.
Very tall guy, big guy, moustache, burly guy. So he buys what he thinks is a miner's outfit, a donkey jacket, you know, and jeans and boots, you know, and all this, and starts walking like a miner, you know what I mean? No, I'm serious, you know. And he just sort of musters in on the outside of the people surrounding Scargill, you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So everywhere Scargill goes, all these guys are following him. They're like bodyguards, you know. And this goes on for about a day, you know. And then suddenly somebody says, who are you? Who are you, lad?
Yeah.
Who are you? And he says, hey, I'm Col. I'm from the Perthshire Coalfield, here to support our great leader, you know. And they said, really? Yeah? Perthshire, you say? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Really? Well, there was some other guy there from the Scottish NUM, you know, who said, well, I'm representing Scotland here. Right. Who are you?
Right.
You know.
Who are you?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Anyway, they... they start sort of manhandling Col, you know. Yeah. Oh, leave me alone, leave me alone. Oh, we all do it at the end, you know.
Yeah.
All right, I'll confess. I'm, you know, I'm from the London Evening Standard.
Right.
I just want to represent Mr. Scargill's views, you know, and I knew you'd think.
Because they hated the press as well, didn't
they? They hated the press, absolutely. So I knew you wouldn't let me in, so they grab him, you know, like he's a prisoner of war or something. And they say, you know, get boss over here, you know, come on, get what are you doing with him? So Scargill turns up and he says, right, what's going on here? And Colin says, Mr. Scargill, I can assure you, you know, my intentions are absolutely honourable.
Right.
I thought the best way to represent, you know, what you're saying and your message to the nation would come from the inside, from the heart.
Yeah.
And Scargill looked at all the others who had hold of Colin and said, right, lads, get rid of Standard, and they threw him over a hedge.
Hey.
They four or five of them lifted him up, and he was a big lad. He went, one, two, whoa! And they threw him over the hedge into a field next door. That was the last of Col.
But he wasn't that badly injured.
No, he wasn't badly injured at all. But
he was quite lucky in a way that they didn't do any worse.
Well, yes, but that would have been physical violence, and in a way,
but there was a bit of that going on.
Oh, there was a lot of it going on.
I mean, if you remember back to the Wapping dispute, and what was going on then?
Oh, it was terrible
when they were smuggling journalists into. The Wapping print plant, where Murdoch had decided to move everything from Fleet Street, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, there was some horrible stuff going on in those days.
There was terrible stuff. I did, before the miners' strike, there was the steel strike, okay? That was another test of Mrs. Thatcher's government by the left, and they decided to close down the steel industry. Now, I went down to Sheerness in Kent, where there was a big, you know, big steel plant or a big coke plant or something.
Right.
And the intimidation was terrible. Any driver of a lorry who was coming through was stopped, dragged out of his cab, pictured, you know, in those days they had Polaroid cameras, right? and then put up on the board of shame,
right.
You will never drive lorries in this country again,
right.
And all that kind
Scab
of
thing.
Yeah, it was awful.
Yeah. Well,
it was
I'll
awful.
Tell you another story.
Shock
in a moment,
intimidation.
But let's have a listen to this.
Yeah.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Yeah, I mean, the story I remember being told was of the people who were followed home, because they used to basically...
Yes, they did.
When the Times and the News of the World, the Sun and,
yep.
and the Sunday Times first
yep.
moved in there, they basically used to have to bus them in.
Yes.
And they used to have the old sort of bird... what do they call it? The chicken wire.
That's
on
right.
the side of the buses on the windows.
Oh, it's worn chicken
they
wire.
Were chucking...
they were hard, you know, metal veils
yeah,
to stop bricks going to the windows.
Going
yeah,
in them,
yeah.
And there was a huge, yeah. you know, mass of pickets
yeah.
all the way down the road on the highway.
That's right.
Before they moved them up to the other end.
That's right.
I remember coming over from America and having to go and see some guys at the News of the World.
Yeah.
And the first two cabs that I stopped, because in those days, of course, Tower Hill, and forgive anyone who's not London-based in, but Tower Hill was so far out of the centre of London.
That's right.
That it seemed a ridiculous place to have an office.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays,
yeah.
it's not even on the outskirts of
no.
Of the city. I
no,
mean, it's very
no.
much in the city.
It's not.
And it's closer than Canary Wharf.
Exactly.
I mean, I live further out in London now
right.
than Tower Hill.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get a cab driver to take me
no.
because they're all NGA.
That's right.
And they were all like, you know, you scab, I'm not taking you there.
Yeah.
And eventually I found some guy who actually would take me there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember hearing all sorts of terrible stories about people who were followed home. You know, they
yeah.
had their cars smashed in.
Oh, all sorts
they
of
had,
things.
You know, people peeing in their letterboxes.
Oh, it was terrible.
There was a couple of firebombs and
it was,
all that.
It was terrible.
But the one final kind of denouement for them was when they apparently there was one particular, because they couldn't use black cabs very much.
Yeah.
There was one particular minicab firm, and you probably know this story, from somewhere like Limehouse that they used to use to ferry people inwards and out.
Yeah.
And they got a visit one night from some of these union guys who turned up wearing with a load of baseball bats.
Yeah.
And they walked into the office, and it was a typical kind of London minicab office,
yeah.
you know, kind of grimy.
Seedy.
Seedy, you know, sort of
chairs
desk there,
with holes
chairs,
in them.
Yeah, a couple of guys sitting around, and this kind of snub-nosed bloke sitting behind the counter, you know. And they came in with these baseball bats and sort of put them down hard on the table and went, right, we're only going to come in once. We're going to tell you now, you stop ferrying those journalists backwards and forwards into that plant, or we're going to be back. And they sort of made the noises on the table with the baseball bats. And the guy very calmly, apparently, reached underneath his chair, pulled out a sawn-off shotgun, and went, oh, yeah? Well, we're in fucking southeast London now, mate, so you want to mess about with us, you better be ready with one of these.
Yeah.
And they never came back.
That's right.
We're never seen again.
Yeah, never seen again, yeah.
But it was nasty stuff.
Oh, it was terrible stuff. When I worked at the Birmingham Mail, the editor was David Hopkinson, Rhino Whip Hopkinson.
Rhino Whip?
Yeah, he'd been the editor of the Sheffield Star.
Oh, yeah.
And he exposed the fact that police in Sheffield were beating prisoners with rhino whips to get confessions
What's
out of
them. What's a rhino whip?
Well,
you mean a whip made out of a rhino's tail?
Yeah, something like that. It was. A, I think it was the sort of thing that jockeys use, you know, in that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was known as Rhino Whip, you know. And he made his name as a campaigning journalist, you know, even though he's very sort of right wing. He thought, well, the police shouldn't really be doing this, you know, and he exposed it.
Well, it is one of the things that people forget about journalists, even though now journalists have this terrible rap, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there were some things. I mean, it's interesting, actually, to see the other night old Oprah Winfrey giving the big hello to proper journalism.
Yes,
because
that's
actually
right.
saying... You know, we've forgotten why journalists are great.
Exactly.
Because we were dissing them for so long.
Yeah.
Because and now we have to listen to all these other idiots.
Yeah.
Fake news merchants.
That's right.
And you forget how useful a lot of journalism has been.
Of course
over
it
the
has
years.
Been. It's exposed everything. Thalidomide.
Mm.
You know, I mean, that was the most terrible, terrible thing that people tried to cover up until Harold Evans decided you can't. People's lives have been completely ruined. So David had done about 10 years as an editor in the provinces with the Sheffield paper and the Birmingham paper, and then accepted an offer to become assistant editor on the Times.
Yeah.
And this happened the year before the dispute started in Wapping.
Yes.
One of the reasons he was taken on was because he'd agreed he would move to Wapping. You see what I mean? Because what Mr. Murgut was trying to do was try and stock up the organisation with people who would go. Because once you ask people
he
already there,
sure,
he wasn't sure. Yeah.
yeah.
So we were employing people then who were asked the direct question. If we move to Wapping, will you go? And David Bonham said, yeah, I will, you know. Anyway, He was followed out one night because they had like back entrances where the, you know, the journalists could come out. They didn't always have to come out through the front and pass the mob and all that. They go, but they were, you know, but the
down by sort of tobacco dock and all that.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. St. Catherine's dock and all that kind of stuff, you know. But there were always people loitering around trying to find him. Anyway, he got to, I think it was Tower Hill Station one night and was set upon by a group of them, three or four of them. And to his credit, he was in his 60s. He, in those days, carried a traditional briefcase, you know what I mean, which was fairly heavy and substantial thing. And he clocked two of them around the face with his briefcase and the others ran off. But, I mean, he was, you know, he was going to be beaten up if he hadn't defended himself.
Well, I mean,
you
look, you look back, you're talking about, like, the miners' disputes in Nottingham and all that, and the flying pickets, and you always see those famous, you know, pieces of footage of the police on horseback racing through. I mean, it was a very violent time, wasn't
it? A terrible time.
That you kind of, I mean, I would struggle now to tell my kids about it because it's just not something that you're used to seeing.
I mean,
I suppose the closest we've seen to it are the riots in Tottenham and all that kind of thing. But I mean, that doesn't happen very much. But I mean, in those days, there was a complete and utter kind of lawlessness about the police and the pickets.
Well,
and, you know,
there was also something else in those days, Mike, and that was that the police were always on the side of the government.
Yeah.
And the workers were always on the side of the opposition.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work like that anymore. No. If there was now a national dispute in the workplace over something, say the car industry or something like that.
Or the railway industry or something.
Or the railway industry.
Well, I mean, that's the only industry really that strikes, though.
That's right, the railway industry. Do you know what? I don't believe the police anymore would group together, because they used to bring in police, you know, from police forces all over the country. Because the whopping situation needed so many officers to maintain law and order.
Well, people say as well, one of the reasons that whopping succeeded was because Murdoch had the backing of
Mrs. Thatcher. Absolutely.
And therefore the backing of the police, and therefore the backing of the establishment and all the rest of it.
Mrs. Thatcher told the Home Secretary, this has got to be a victory for new practices.
Yeah, and because for her it was a massive victory over unions in general. Right?
It was outlawing outdated union practices, which were crippling industry in this country. That was her view.
Which, by the way, included the reason why many of the cab drivers who worked for News International were, in fact, members of the NGA.
Yeah, they were.
It was because they didn't have a full-time job.
No.
Because they used to be able to just have somebody sign them in.
That's right.
And they could drive a cab all day, and they could pick up two wages.
I worked at the Sunday
Mirror.
Totally
wrong.
I worked Sunday Mirror on Saturdays. Mm. And at the end of the day, you went upstairs, you got about £120 in cash for
a
day.
A lot of money in those
days. Huge. I'm telling you, I think I was earning in those days about £8,000 a year. Mm. So work that out. That's about £600 a month.
Yeah.
And for one day's work, I was getting £120.
Yeah.
And all I had to sign was Donald Duck.
Yeah.
That's all they wanted you to sign. They didn't want any identities or anything, right?
And you didn't have to pay tax, or
didn't have to pay tax or anything. You put that in your pocket. Imagine what a weekend you're going to have then.
I
getting 120 tax-free in your pocket for doing very little.
Yeah.
Sitting around in the Daily Mirror building all day and rewriting a couple of stories, you know.
Mm.
And it was like that. So there were working practices that had to be sorted out. But it was a rough old time.
Mm.
But Arthur Scargill is still alive to this day. He's 80 and all that. He famously said, when it got to the end and he was trying to get pushed out of his hat and all out of this grace and favour flat and all that, he actually, they said, why didn't you just quit, Arthur? Why didn't you just give it up?
Mm.
Nobody wants you anymore. And he said, what do you want me to do? Go and run a fish shop.
Yeah.
He didn't even say fish and chip. He said, go and run a fish shop. Because he knew the game was over.
Right.
He lived quite a luxurious lifestyle in Yorkshire.
I'm sure he did.
He moved the headquarters of the NUM up to Yorkshire.
All of those big union leaders whose names many people won't know now, but who were sort of synonymous with the power of the unions in those days.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they were incredible figures, really historical figures, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. I totally agree.
Mm.
Now, I reckon in the next few days we might hear that Mr. Assange may have been evicted from the Ecuadorian embassy.
He got a passport the other day, didn't he?
Yeah.
But except, apparently, the British government have not yet admitted or will not admit that he should have diplomatic status.
Well, apparently...
It's a very odd story.
It's a very odd story.
He's a very odd bloke.
Very odd bloke indeed. The thing is, he's lived in that place so long, he's now got a deficiency of vitamin D.
Has he?
Now, vitamin D...
Oh, because he's not gone out in the sunshine.
Exactly.
Haven't they got like a courtyard or something?
No,
you go and
they haven't. They haven't even got a courtyard.
Have they not?
He can go out on a balcony and stand there for an hour or two.
We've seen him there, haven't we? Because he always comes out and talks
comes out
on
the balcony and talks, Right, so this guy's
He's a bit of a plank, though, isn't he?
Well, he's... he's worried about being extradited.
Yeah, but
to America.
He needn't worry about that. Nobody's interested in what he did in America. Nobody cares.
Well, the Americans are.
No, the reason he doesn't want to be bloody extradited, yeah, he doesn't want to go to Sweden.
No, they've dropped all those charges.
To face charges.
They've dropped all the charges. This is exactly the point, Mike. What's happened is, the Swedes have now said that it's gone through an expiry time.
Yeah.
You know, it does
right.
crimes go through an expiry time and all that. And they said they're no longer interested, right?
Okay.
So everybody thought, right, he'll come out now and he'll go back to Sweden.
Right.
But the Americans said, we don't care whether you've dropped your alleged rape charges or not. When he gets out, we're applying for an extradition treaty, whichever country he's in.
Yeah.
They still believe him to be an arch criminal. If he is taken to court in America, he will end up in Marion, the jail that you don't ever see sunlight from
for 40
years.
In Illinois.
It's an underground jail. It's an underground
jail. That's
where
John Gotti died, isn't
it? That's right, absolutely.
And Al Capone.
And Al Capone died in Alcatraz.
Did he?
Yes, he did,
Okay.
Yeah. No, the one I'm talking about, you know about it.
Yeah.
There aren't even windows in the cells. They are built underground.
Yeah.
They have no contact with human beings.
Mm.
Their food is pushed through a letterbox into their cell.
Yeah.
And when they've eaten it, they push it back.
Right.
They have no contact with any other human beings, so they cannot spread their philosophy of anti-Americanism.
Well, they don't really take too kindly to criminality in America, do they?
Well, they don't take too kindly to...
Was it Abu Hamza that we read about?
Abu Hamza is in
apparently not very well.
Well, he's in another top security American jail, isn't he? Where he doesn't see other people as well. But the greatest crime you can commit in America is to give away state secrets.
Yeah.
But more than that...
Yeah, or to put lives at risk.
I was about to say, you're absolutely right. More than that, the CIA will say that because of releasing those documents, that agents of the CIA and American security services around the world will have been killed as a result of releasing that information.
Mm.
Therefore, he will be sentenced for murder.
Well, he's never going to come out, is he? He's going to stay in the embassy for the rest of his life.
Well, what would you do if you were him?
If I was him, I think I would face the music, because I think the thing about what he has done, whether you agree with it or not, and I don't particularly, actually. I mean, I'm all for transparency in government.
Yeah.
I'm all for people holding government to account.
Yeah.
But I'm not in favour of stealing information and releasing it to the general public. And by the way, I don't think he did it particularly well, because the whole point of releasing information is that you release it in small, little bite-sized form. You don't release,
not
like,
massive.
78,000 pages of documents
that
nobody can work out.
All at once.
And that you then give it to everybody who will do bad things with it. I mean, it's one thing for us to read the front page of The Guardian and say, oh, that's an interesting story.
Yeah.
But if you then give 72,000 documents to ISIS in order for them to be able to claim success in blowing something up, then that's wrong, in my view.
I totally agree.
And I think if you're going to be... sort of the man of principle, then be a man of principle and stand up for what you believe in and take the consequences and don't hide out like some kind of little
twat,
you know, who really is too frightened of his own shadow.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm thinking, I'm Assange, so I live in this, you know, small building, the Ecuadorian embassy, and I'm free to breathe and I'm free to watch television.
I mean, he's always complaining, for example, that he is in somehow, some way being... you know, kept prisoner.
Yeah, that's right.
That's his own decision.
Yeah, so
nobody
you come
else.
Out and the Americans get you back to America and then you spend the rest of your life in an underground sort of cell for 40 years. I'm not sure which of the two are. I think I'll probably kill myself, actually.
I think there's something to be said for doing your time and taking your punishment because you kind of know what you're going through.
Yeah, but for
there's
the rest of your life.
Yeah, but there's nothing worse than sitting where he sits
that's
now.
That's right.
Knowing that if something worse could happen...
That's right.
Because, you know, you're frightened of, you know, as I say, you're frightened to do anything.
I totally agree. You could always hope that if you went to America and, you know, you made a particular plea or something like that, or some human rights nut would sort of, you know, get you off or something like that.
Yeah.
But the point I was going to make is that where you can defend the West and the way we do things is that if this had been an issue with the Russian government, if it had been an issue with Mr. Putin...
They would have killed him by now.
He would have been dead a long time ago.
They would have found some way inside the Ecuadorian embassy... some guy would have come down the chimney. Somebody would have come...
Poisoned his food.
They would not be pissing around.
Or when he was coming out on the balcony, they'd had a sniper across the road.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That would have been the end of him.
Exactly.
You know,
and that, by the way, I think is a better way to solve the problem.
Maybe.
Because then it's not an itch. It's not a sore, you've got to itch.
Yeah.
It's not a,
I find
it's not a boil on your backside.
I find him to be a pretty odious character.
Oh, dreadfully odious.
And if I was running the Ecuadorian embassy, I would have kicked him out a long
so
time ago.
So would I have done, yeah.
You know?
And remember, Ecuador can't be very popular with America now because they've harboured this guy for so long, so they've not done that many favours.
No.
But you're absolutely right. The Russians had been involved, he'd have been history three or 4 years ago.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Well, I think we've come to the end of another glorious episode of On the Record.
Do you know what I'm going to do now?
What are you going to do now?
I'm going to have a digestive biscuit.
Are you?
Because the lovely people who run these studios
at Audio Boom, they're very nice.
They're very nice indeed, and they provide us with a chocolate biscuit to keep our energy levels up.
Well, I haven't had a chocolate biscuit because I don't like to eat and talk.
Right.
Because, as I've explained previously, I'd be spitting it all over you from here.
No, you wouldn't. Well, but you're finished talking now, so you can have a biscuit.
Well, I'm not sure I want a biscuit.
Well, I'm going to have one.
I'm going to go and have a beer, I think, instead.
I'm going to have a beer as well, but I'm going to have a biscuit, definitely. I don't eat a lot of biscuits these days. I like to watch my sugar glucose levels.
Okay.
So I'm going to have one.
All right.
Okay.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That's been On the Record. We'll be back soon.
Yeah.
With Too Much.
Yeah. Now, the two Brians, Brian Hitchens was the news editor in London.
Yeah.
Brian Vine was the doyen of the New York press. So the guy who would never buy us a drink in Costello's because he thought we were too young
That's
and inexperienced
right.
to join his circle.
Shockingly,
you know, his circle of acolytes, you know, kind of stuff. You know?
Who, in fact, had done this to me and probably to you as well.
Yeah.
Actually pointed to me at one point and said, everybody gets a drink apart from him.
Yes. Yeah.
He didn't even know me. I thought, what a wanker.
Yeah. What a twat, what a complete twat. Well, came to a sorry end. He died.
Well, there's no need to dance.
No,
sorry that he's
I stayed in his house once.
Did you?
I stayed in his house once
in
West London. No, in West London.
Oh, did you?
When he came back.
Why did you stay there?
Because the New York Welcome Committee was a great friend because she'd worked for him for 6 years.
Mm, she hadn't shamed him as well, actually.
No, definitely not.
Thank God for that.
Had to tie him once to a chair with sellotape to stop him chasing around the desk, seriously, when he came back from lunch after like half a dozen great cocktails.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
He used to drink the
martinis.
The martinis, that's right, yeah. So, anyway, on the way to where they were going, so Brian Vine in his head thought, they're taking us to a torture centre or something like that.
They hook us up to the electrodes.
Yeah. So he says to Hitchens, right, he says, "Now then, Hitchens, I'm going to have to pull rank on you.
Yeah.
These swine, if they decide they're going to torture us, you'll have to go first."
What a gentleman.
Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable. That does not surprise me in the slightest. If you're going to be sort of the man of principle, then be a man of principle and stand up for what you believe in and take the consequences and don't hide out like some kind of little
twat.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.